York City.
Y'all ready for this?
Hi everyone, welcome to day one. No, fuck off. Hi, welcome to Inside the Ropes SummerSlam review. There's not 7 days, seven podcasts anymore. We can't be bothered. We've done enough. You can keep your 7 days, seven podcasts till WrestleMania. But thank you for listening to all of them last week. It was lovely. I'm joined here to talk about SummerSlam with my two American friends. First up, he is the curmudgeon from the Midwest. It is David McCutcheon. Hello, David.
Hello. The reason I am so angry constantly is that it's just constantly like 105 degrees here, and the humidity is so thick that you could take a knife outside and like make little shavings in the air, you know? So,
To be fair, it's been so humid in New York that in this week that I can't imagine what you've had to go through.
Yeah. And it's just awful. I say this as it was like 70 degrees and gorgeous last night.
Yeah, well, at least you can enjoy that sometimes. And I'm also joined by the woman who, probably the woman that I know with the longest hair, Sondra. Hi, Sondra.
Hi, Kenny. Hi, David. It's lovely to be back on this day 9 of podcasting in a row. I was thinking about that last night because we did the SmackDown summary on the Sunday before we started 7 Days, 7 Podcasts, so it's been a marathon, but it's been a fun marathon, and it's been lovely.
It has. It's been fun. Now, before we talk about SummerSlam, David's not checked out, but Sondra, you and I both checked out the Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz fight from UFC on Saturday night. And it's interesting because obviously NXT was on for like 2.5 hours, and then the Conor fight was on after it. Neither of us are huge connoisseurs of UFC.
We know very little, but we enjoy it.
Yeah. I think it was the best fight I've watched, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree. It was intense. I was on the edge of my seat, which I wasn't. I was sitting on the floor when I was watching it. But yeah, I don't know. I thought it was super intense. And I feel like I was invested because I really, really, really like Conor McGregor. I think he's such a lovely dick.
Yeah, he's like the best dick.
Yeah.
That's the wrong way to phrase that. But
can I just interject here because I have nothing to add otherwise? Sure. Wieners sure are weird, right? Like, what a weird thing. Like, just imagine a penis in your mind right now. I know it's not very hard, you guys. Get it? But man, oh man, what a weird looking thing, right? Like, why do we have those? It's really weird.
I think balls I don't have one.
Yeah. Just the whole. Well, Sondra, I don't know that for certain, I'm not going to judge you accordingly. People can have whatever type of organs they're happy with, right? You know, that's my call.
Caitlyn Jenner has proven that.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You, whatever you feel like, man. However you feel that you were born, I believe you, and good for you. But man, oh man, wieners are weird. I don't think that I would choose to have one if like I had a choice, and I'm way too lazy to go get a surgery and change things. So yeah, wieners sure are weird, you guys. That's my UFC ramble.
Great. Okay, I'm glad we got that in there. The thing that I found about the fight though was that although Conor McGregor is an absolute arsehole and he always is in media interviews and all that sort of stuff, like I found that when the fight started, I desperately wanted him to win. Because if he won, it meant that we got more of him being an arsehole and saying all these outlandish things and annoying people. And because, like, I don't think that in UFC anybody else's fights really come close to his, apart from Ronda when she used to fight. But then again, Ronda's fights tended to be quite short and not that exciting. Whereas Conor,
it was a different type of excitement surrounding Ronda's fights.
Yeah, exactly. And then, well, obviously Brock's fight was pretty exciting. Well. Yeah, in certain ways. But so I thought we should just mention it. He went 5 rounds, which he never has before. I was in an Irish bar watching it, and they were going apeshit when he won at the end. But I don't think he should try to fight Nate Diaz again, because I felt like he was quite lucky to win this one.
I'll be honest, I didn't know who won when I was watching it. Mm-hmm. And I had to wait until the decision because I mean, not that I know enough about UFC to really even call winners a lot of the time. I'm getting a little bit better at being able to tell when people are winning stuff. But this one, I wasn't sure. And maybe that's just my inexperience, but I mean, it was pretty close.
Well, I think it was the end of round three that when Nate Diaz had Conor up against the corner of the octagon, like if that had gone 10 seconds longer, he would have lost.
Right.
And luckily the siren stopped that. But yeah, so great fight. I guess we'll see where he goes next. And then the next UFC fight that I guess we'll be talking about probably is UFC 203 when CM Punk gets in the octagon.
Absolutely. Have you checked out the documentary, The Evolution of Punk?
Yeah. I've watched it. So it's a four-parter. So I've watched the first part. AJ Lee's in it quite a lot. I think my favorite thing about the documentary is that, and I do love CM Punk unabashedly, but like they try to make it like he's this really nice guy.
I know.
And he's just not in any way, shape, or form. Like he's clearly a dick, but that's part of his charm.
That's part of CM Punk, though. I mean, that's part of what I love about him. To be honest, same with Conor McGregor, right? Maybe I just like assholes.
Another great sentence for insight.
Take all these out of context and it'll be stupid.
So let's move on from assholes and dicks to SummerSlam. This is everybody's talking about it. Whether you liked it, whether you didn't like it, whether you were in the middle, everybody's kind of talking about it. So it'll be interesting to see where our opinions lie as we get into everything. So before we sort of start, when I got to the show, they had a different set and that made me so happy. Like, I was so happy that they had
a better LED ring post, and I thought, Kenny is beside himself right now.
I was giddy. I was absolutely giddy because I was just like, they don't have that stupid HD Tron thing. This is great, you know? So, I'm happy they made the effort to do something different with the set. But we got there about 6 o'clock, so we missed the 12-man tag. I know, and David didn't get to watch the pre-show, hence if he's quiet at this portion, that's why. He's not just, like, silent in a...
One time I'll ever be quiet in my life.
Yeah, so enjoy this moment. So the 12-man tag, we missed it, but what happened?
Basically, see SmackDown last week-ish, except I don't even think this was necessarily as good as the match on SmackDown last week. It was fun. It was fine, I guess, for what it was. It turned into a big melee in the middle where commentary was like, so who's the legal man? No idea. Just about to ask you that. Not super sure. And I think it was still Jason Jordan and whoever else was in there with him at that point. I don't remember, honestly. It all blends together. But the main point of the match was at the end, they did a very badly timed Jey Uso, like, stealing the pin thing from American Alpha, because Jason Jordan tagged in Chan Gable to do the Grand Amplitude, and Jey Uso, I think it was on the apron, tags Chad Gable, like, just before he's about to jump off or whatever, and so he tags him, and Chad Gable wasn't sure if there was a tag, but it looked like Chad Gable wasn't sure if he was supposed to have noticed the tag or not. And then Jey Uso stole the pin and then they all looked at each other. And then for some reason, like, Chad Gable and Jason Jordan seemed perfectly fine with getting their hands raised. Like, Chad Gable was kind of like, oh, what happened? Oh, well, like, we still won. So that's cool because, you know, he's a good, decent human being and not one who needs to just take all the glory for himself because, you know, he's awesome. And then the Uso was like yelling for some reason and looked angry and upset about stuff. And commentary was just like, why does Jey Uso look upset when he's the one who stole the pin?
Because he's related to Roman Reigns.
Basically, yeah. Yeah.
That would make me angry.
So it was an attempt to signal a heel turn coming from the Usos. And I'm guessing that we're setting up American Alpha versus the Usos, which does make sense.
I'll be honest, I'm pretty happy at that. Like, I didn't see it, so I can't comment on the execution of it.
The execution of it was just so poor.
But I'm really into the idea of the Usos as a heel tag team because they do have really good matches, but the problem is the lack of character, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
If they become heels and they can channel something from some, because like the thing is, I interviewed them on Saturday morning, I think it was. And those guys have got so much personality. Like, they're so fun when you're around them. And for some reason, it just doesn't translate. Like, they were, of all the people that I met over 2 to 3 days, the only person that had more energy and was funnier, with only two, were either Xavier Woods or Sheamus. Like, they had great energy, so there's something there in them that hopefully they can channel somehow. And
I feel like they have been interesting in the past when they're involved in something that matters, but they've just done the same thing for so long that a heel turn could be great, and if they tell a good story with it, which I really think they could, and I'm glad that there's a tag team story emerging in the SmackDown Tag Team Division, because that's what we've been lacking.
100%. Then we got Sami Zayn and Neville against the Dudley Boys. When we'd literally just like taken our seats, and I nearly shat myself because the pyro went off for the Dudleys, and I had no idea it was about to happen. So yeah, I was terrified. But yeah, big reception for all four of these guys. It was quite clearly just a kind of a showcase match thing. Neville got the red arrow in the end. They won after about 8 minutes. There's not really much to say about it, but did you have anything you want to say about it, Sandra?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty fun. I like seeing Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn teaming together. Also, most importantly about this match, right beforehand, when Renee Young was throwing over from the pre-show to the actual match, to the entrances and whatnot, she said, and we're going to be seeing Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville taking on the Dudley Boys. She called him Adrian, and I got excited.
Some people make mistakes, Sandra. Like, it's not her fault.
Hey, now. It was like the most exciting.
Later on in the show, she did call Booker T Booker King.
So. Oh, yeah.
Booker King. Well, he was King Booker, so I guess,
yeah, that's what I said.
She was looking at Booker T and Jerry the King Lawler, and it was one of those moments where she's like, yep, I just fucked that up. Whatever, we're going with it, because Renee Young is great at recovering and landing on her feet and reclaiming control of a table, and I just love
her. She's the best.
But it was also very cool to see them tag together and do the spot where Sami Zayn gets down on all fours and Adrian Neville does the standing corkscrew moonsault off of him. Because they did that one time in NXT, and so I was just feeling very nostalgic about that. I did get called out on Twitter for cheering for Adrian Neville and Sami Zayn, not an established tag team, against the Dudley Boys, like a super established tag team.
Yes.
And you know what? It's fair. It's totally fair.
Sometimes you just need to accept that you're a hypocrite when you're enjoying something.
Like, I said, logically, I think Dre Warner was the one who called me out. You know what? Logically, you're absolutely correct, sir. This should be something that bothers me. But logic goes out the window when Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville are involved, and also it's just the Dudleys and I don't care about them. So sometimes wrestling is subjective, and I will just admit to being a massive hypocrite in this situation. I'm fine with it.
Finally, last thing in the pre-show, we got Cesaro and Sheamus in the Best of Seven series. They went about 15 minutes, and I thought this was really, really good.
One of my favorite matches of the night, actually.
Yeah, I think this was like maybe second best match of the night, third best match of the night. It was great. Like, it was really good. It was really back and forth. Cesaro got a lot of offense in. Sheamus, when he was trying to beat Cesaro, like, what was it he did? He hit something and Cesaro kicked out, and he just looked like...
He hit White Noise on him.
He hit White Noise and Cesaro kicked out, and he just looked at him like, how the fuck did you kick out of that?
Yeah.
And the fans were really into it, the crowd were really into it, and then in the end... when Cesaro went to go for the sharpshooter, Sheamus did an eye poke that the referee didn't see, sent him into the turnbuckle, and hit a brogue kick for the win. I think Sheamus needed to win this. Like, this needed to go for him.
Yeah, I think so too. I think I said in the prediction show that it wouldn't make sense for Cesaro to have three clean wins, to start off the Best of Seven series, because he does have two wins over Sheamus already, right? And to have him start on top here, it would upset the dynamic of the whole thing, I think. And I think Sheamus winning was the right call. And I am looking forward to more from this Best of Seven series. I was pretty excited about it going into it anyway. But if they can keep putting on matches like this, and it can't be this match every time, right? Like, you don't want to have this exact same thing all the time, because even if it's like really, really good, you can have too much of a good thing. You can overdo something. And we've seen Raw overdo things a lot. But I think there are a lot of stories they can tell with this. Like, one of them could end in a disqualification. One of them could, end in something else. Like, there are many stories that they could tell, and I don't think that these two guys are just going to do the same match over and over, because I think they're way too smart for that.
I have an interjection here. A, you are correct. That wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for Cesaro to win three in a row. However, it also wouldn't make sense to start a best of seven series after you've had two matches.
This is true.
Beyond that, though, do you think that they will mix it up a little bit and add stipulations to the matches? Like,
they might.
You know, I mean, a cage match, for instance, anything like that. That might be kind of fun.
I think they could do that because, like, so if they do, say they do the second match tonight on Raw.
Yeah.
They've got to go another 5 weeks, right? If it goes seven.
Yeah.
So, like, that could take them at least through to Clash of Champions.
Yeah, no doubt.
So, like, yeah, I like the idea of maybe, like, you know, maybe the final match is, like, you know, a big stipulation or something. I think somebody had tweeted me last night saying, oh, you know, Cesaro and Sheamus will never be able to top this. And I'm like, well, I think they could, but I think that's also the point. You know, they should be looking to top every match that they do. And if they can, then great, you know.
Well, and I think they can tell different stories with different matches, too. Like, I think one of the matches should probably be really short. Just so that it's not, like, trying to put on a classic every time. I think they need to carry it up.
I also like David's, like, suggestion of, like, so, you know, you could understand, like, Mick Foley just, like, making one match a stipulation to make Raw better that night or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could see that happening, so.
Or perhaps the Game 7 blow-off, you know, you could put that in a cage. You could, you know, do a million different things with it. It could be really fun.
Yeah, 100%.
I could see them main eventing a Raw with this.
They could. I mean, because Rusev's done it a couple of weeks, then they could. But let's get to the pay-per-view when David can rejoin our conversation. It kicks off with an opening video package that was narrated by the actor Michael Rapaport, who, if you watched Friends back in the day, he played Phoebe's boyfriend cop. So there's a video package talking about Brooklyn, big clips of key matches for the show, Pyro out your tits. And then we were starting SummerSlam. They've got the Raw announced team down at ringside with the other announced teams, which I know some people were a bit agitated about, but I was okay with it because, like, this isn't an episode of Monday Night Raw. You know, this is like SummerSlam, so everybody's coming to SummerSlam to commentate. So I was kind of okay that they were down ringside with the other announced teams. Sadly, David Otunga was there, but, you know, can't win them all.
Yeah, he is not very good.
Yeah, he's pish.
But I like them switching up the commentary for the different matches and stuff. So there was that.
Yeah. So yeah. Do you know what? I don't even know who commentated the main event. So when we get to that, let me know, because I know that there was.
I do, because I was so excited.
Mauro Ranallo, JBL, Corey Graves, and Byron Saxton.
Wow. Take Byron out there, and you've got a good three. Noel, JBL.
I agree completely.
Actually, And I was going to talk about this, actually, when we got to the main event. We're mentioning it now. I loved commentary during the main event. Absolutely loved it. And I
thought it was good. And also good for Mauro Ranallo for actually getting to call main events on SummerSlam. That's
it was
crazy.
Very cool. And I thought the four-man booth seemed like something that should have felt really crowded, and it didn't. I think they all worked together really well. And, I mean, I love Byron Saxton, so I will stand up for Byron Saxton till the end of time.
At least someone does, besides his mother.
Yeah, so I thought he did a really good job too.
Yeah, I mean, I've not watched it back yet, so I can only comment on the live part of it. But there's a couple of things people tweeted me that I'll bring up when it comes to time, just to get your opinions on, because you guys have seen it on TV, so you'll know better than me. But Enzo and Cass come out, they do a big New York entrance, they sing songs, they make fun of people. It's all very good. And
my question about that, are they going to have to cut that segment?
Because they sang the Empire State of Mind.
Yep, because they cut the New Day one from the network.
Oh, from SummerSlam last year, yeah. They might have to. Be a shame.
I know.
If that's a good point, I'm going to make sure to download the original version so that I can watch everything. So we kicked off with Enzo and Cass against Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens. Went about 13 minutes. I thought this was really fun. I enjoyed it, and I thought it was the right result for Jericho and Owens to win, because, to be honest, selfishly, I just want this to continue because I like these four guys together and I like the teams. David's thoughts on the opener?
We arrived home about 1 a.m. from a birthday party, and my wife was completely drunk, and so she was, like, singing along and everything very drunkenly, so it was really funny. That was my favorite thing, was her trying to do the can't teach that and soft thing. So that was pretty fun. I told her that Jericho would end up pinning Enzo, and whenever that happened, she started marking out very drunkenly. So that was also fun. This was the right result, I think. Like I said, with the predictions, these guys had to end up winning. The heels got to go over, that way they can continue the feud. And what have we learned over the years about the WWE? The good guys always lose in their hometowns. So whenever it was New York, he came out with the Yankee gear, and so did, and I was just like, yeah, he's going under. That's going to happen tonight. And I like the finish a lot. I thought the finishing move was cool. It was like a 3D with the code breaker. That was kind of neat.
I also liked how Owens and Jericho seemed to have a plan that the only way they could, or well, not the only way, but the way they planned to win was to take out Cass so they could get to Enzo.
It was a good story, and I don't know if you caught this on at the live experience, but after they won, they were going up the ramp, and Kevin just turns to Jericho and goes, "I love you, Chris." and then Jericho turns to him and goes, "I love you too, man." And then they hug and embrace, and it's just wonderful.
It was a love fest all around. I think that was the best part of it. And the two of them together are just so great. And I think I predicted Enzo and Cass because I was feeling pessimistic that Jericho and Owens weren't going to stay together necessarily. But oh boy, am I glad that they're still a thing, because they're delightful. I mean, like, they were sharing like a towel backstage. And Kevin Owens, like, wrapped the towel around his neck like a scarf so he could be like Jericho. And like Kevin Owens also doing the Enzo like shuffle thing apron.
That was so funny. Yeah,
goodness.
I got up to get something to eat because I was starving at 1 a.m. And my wife, completely plastered, just started screaming, "You've gotta rewind it." So I came back in and I rewound it, and I was incredibly happy that I did, because that shuffle was just tremendous.
Sandra, what do you think of this opener?
I thought it was really fun. I mean, basically everything you guys are saying. I'm glad that it went so well. I really liked the New York themed promo and not the Bert and Ernie gay joke promo. So that was a welcome change of pace for me from Enzo and Cass. Because there are two different versions of Enzo and Cass, and there's the version I really super love when they do themed promos and do clever stuff with it. And when Big Cass sings, oh my goodness, does my heart explode, because I just love him. And whenever Big Cass sings, I get very, very excited, because I just kind of, I hope that that's a theme someday. Like, if we can ever get another Aiden English Big Cass singing contest ever in life, I think that would just kind of make life worth living. But no, it was great. I was very happy that Jericho and Kevin Owens won, because I do want to see this continue, and I think it was really fun.
Then we had a backstage promo with all the authority figures: Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan, Mick Foley, Stephanie, John Stewart came in. Then the New Day came in, and the New Day ended up taking John Stewart away with them. Stephanie talked about abusing power, so that was that. But we come to, now this is something that caused a lot of, all I'm saying is, when I was turning Twitter on last night during the show, I had so many people tweeting about, like, "I can't believe that Sasha and Charlotte's on second. I cannot believe they're being disrespected this way," and all this sort of stuff. And like, for me, I was pretty much like, this is a stacked card, and I don't know where you put any of them. Like, I don't know if there was any way to book this card order-wise where everybody was going to be happy about where you put things. So it didn't really bother me that it was in second, but I guess when you guys are talking about it, let me know. But Sandra, Sasha and Charlotte, the shocking victory where Charlotte regains the championship. What did you think of this one?
This was my favorite match of the night. I don't know. AJ Cena was also really, really, really good. But this one is the one that I'm, I guess, the most invested in, just because it's the women's title, and that's kind of the thing I'm really invested in. And them being on second surprised me, for sure, but I didn't take it necessarily as a sign of, like, huge disrespect. I think the card order was a problem, especially getting on toward the end. But like you say, it was very stacked and there was just so much to put on it that I don't know where I would have put it necessarily to make it seem like a bigger deal. I think they were trying to juggle a lot of different things, right? Like trying to mix in Raw and SmackDown, kind of mix that up. They were trying not to make SmackDown look less important than Raw in a way, but it kind of felt like the card was just thrown out there. But regardless of where this was on the card, I think they had an absolute killer match. And I would really appreciate if Sasha Banks would stop landing on her head quite so often. I just worry for her safety. Like, I think even Will Ospreay tweeted last night, yet Sasha, please look back when you do a Rana because you legitimately almost gave me a heart attack.
Yeah, it's tough to watch. Like, live, we were just like, oh, holy shit, what is she doing?
To be fair, Charlotte also kind of dropped her immediately in that turnbuckle spot.
She did.
That was on Charlotte. That wasn't on Sasha.
No. Like, some of it was, I mean, it's on both of them going all out, though. And I think that's the thing, is that they are going completely just all out on this. And they looked like they had a point to prove. I think going on second, they had a point to prove, and they proved it, unlike another match later on in the show that we'll talk about.
I think the order of this show is a really interesting conversation, but it's really difficult to know where to have it or when to have it, because it's like, have we covered matches, have we not? But I really enjoyed this match. I thought that, like, if you told me before the show that Charlotte was going to win the title back, I probably would have been like, oh, I don't like the hot shot idea and blah 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 blah. But
I don't think it felt like a hot shot, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, I think in the moment and during the match, it was a good story. Like, I loved the bit where Charlotte's just, like, yelling at Sasha, I'm better than you. And then she proved it. Like, there's nothing worse than when a heel proves what she's saying or what he's saying. Like, it's you just hate them. David, what do you think of a Sasha-Charlotte pay-per-view SummerSlam thing?
This was my second favorite match of the night, and it shouldn't have gone on second at all, especially knowing what we know now. Hindsight's 20/20. However, booking isn't, you know, hindsight. You know, they knew the outcome whenever they were planning this thing. And if they knew the outcome, this should have went on second to last, not second to start. So, this would have, I understand that you got to make the crowd happy and you got to have them leave happy, and heel going over that late in the card might not fly on a level of Vince McMahon. However, facts are facts. They knew it was going to be an amazing match. Like, when do these two get in the ring and it's not an amazing match, you know? It was a tad bit sloppy at times. Charlotte dropping Sasha just like, I don't know if that was by accident. I hope it was by accident. Because just dropping her right on her head in the corner, that's very, you know, the commentary team kept on going, what a veteran move by Charlotte after she'd do just about anything. And I'm like, well, okay, but that one in the corner, that's not a veteran move. That's a very amateur move. So, the match itself, though, once it got going, really solid stuff. I loved it. Yeah, the lineup in general, though, man, they didn't know where they were really placing anything. It was sort of a hodgepodge, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm gonna disagree on one thing. I don't think this should have gone on second to last, because, and a lot of people did say that it should have gone on second to last, but I think had it went on there, I think the crowd, from where I was anyway, were very fatigued by second to last. And I think that the place that this was, it got the kind of optimum reaction.
You know, I'll play devil's advocate here and say, would the crowd have gotten more alive if there was anything worthwhile in the last hour of the show?
Yeah, and maybe they would have. Maybe they would. It's one of those things. It's we would only have known if they'd done it. But
right. And looking back in retrospect, looking at like the history of wrestling crowds, there are ebbs and flows. A crowd will get back up to that point. Eddie Guerrero practiced that, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
He would bring them down and then get them back up in the main event.
I think for me, like, the reason that it got on second didn't bother me as much as it did bother a lot of people is that it felt like a big match. It felt like it was presented like a big match. I don't know how the commentary team put it over when they were talking about it, but I'm hoping that they put it across as if it was a big deal.
It felt like a big deal on commentary.
Good. So, I mean, in that sense, like, I was okay with that, but I do get that people, because a lot of people were tweeting me saying, like, oh, well, this is going on before the six women tag. And it's like, well, I don't think that that's indicative of them thinking that the six women tag is more important. Like, I don't think that's, order doesn't seem to mean that as much anymore in wrestling because there's so many things on the show. Like, this match had, like, 2 world titles, 3 other titles, the big interpromotional match. There's a ton of stuff on this show, but yeah.
So I think the better argument to have instead of match placement is, should SummerSlam really be as long as it is?
No.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it being 4 hours, but it's the
4 hours is fine.
It's the 2-hour pre-show.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then you add the other 2, and 6 hours is just... Here's the thing, right?
When John Cena came out for his match with AJ Styles, I turned to the guys and I said, John Cena's coming out for his match, and there is 3 hours left on this show.
Yeah.
Like, that's just insane. Nuts,
right? Yeah, exactly. And, like, that's the thing, is, like, I'll go over to St. Louis Anarchy here in St. Louis over in Alton, Illinois, and I will see guys like Johnny Gargano, and I will see guys like ACH and Tommaso Ciampa and Michael Elgin and the Young Bucks. I'll see these guys front row for $15. In fact, you can catch me there this weekend. Go over there. If you're in the area, buy some tickets. Go check me out. Go check it out. We'll have a good time.
Go check me out.
Yeah, look at that. Check me out at the wrestling.
Yeah, check me out at the wrestling.
He'll be selling his gimmicks for $5.
Yeah, I will. I will. I will buy you a beer. If you mention ITR to me, I'll buy you a beer. Boom. Just like that. Here's the thing, though. There's my plug for Anarchy. But occasionally, Anarchy will go 5 hours. And I'll be watching the Young Bucks. I'll be watching Michael Elgin. I'll be watching Johnny Gargano, Davey Vega. I will be watching Kyle O'Reilly, some of the greatest wrestlers in the world in New Japan, etc. And after a while, after 5 hours, I'm spent. It doesn't matter if you're watching the greatest wrestling that you'll ever watch. It doesn't matter if you're front row. It doesn't even matter if there's dollar beers. Occasionally, you're going to get a little bit sleepy. And I think 6 hours, especially with some of the stuff that they had on this card, it's just too much. The best wrestling in the world cannot keep you entertained for 5 hours, let alone stuff that has severe ebbs and flows in it.
It's very true. Speaking of which, we've actually got a lot more to talk about, so we should keep going.
Yeah, can I actually mention one more thing about the actual match? Because I haven't gotten to say that much about it. David mentioned how the match felt a little bit messy at times, and I'll say that I agree that it felt messy, but I like when matches like this feel messy. I like the way that Sasha and Charlotte don't look clean and crisp in everything they do all the time, because that makes it feel like a bigger deal to me, and it makes it feel like a fight that they're desperate to win, and I think the desperation comes through.
Well, I think we're going to have, if you want to see a fight, we're gonna talk about one of those later on as well. Yeah. But yeah, Sasha and Charlotte did a great job in the match. Then we got Anderson and Gallows bumping into AJ Styles. They're chatting to each other. Did their beat up John Cena thing, and then Finn Balor showed up and just left, giving them the tease. So I guess, you know, they decided to give us one tease on screen.
Finn Balor is the ultimate tease, and it's so wonderful, isn't it? Like, he refused to do the too sweet to him.
Of course. It's great. But speaking of things, you know, this show being long, I think something that should have been cut from this show was this next match. The Miz versus Apollo Crews, the Intercontinental Championship. As soon as this match began, I chose to go and get a drink, because I was just like, you know, you need to pick your spots in a show like this to go and get a drink, and I just didn't care about it. I'm glad The Miz retained. I think it was the right move. But it was 6 minutes. I don't think it really did anything for either guy. So, yeah, that's all I've got to say about it. David, anything to say about The Miz and Apollo Crews?
I love the actual match. I thought the actual match was really fun. I despise the finish. Why would you pin him clean just in the middle of the ring? You're a heel. Cheat to win. That's the whole point of being a heel. God, it's wrestling 101. Seriously. Under my skin.
Sondra.
I thought the match was very competent and entirely skippable. It felt like something that would happen on an episode of SmackDown, like a bunch of the SmackDown matches on this show.
I guess it all depends whether this is one and done or it keeps going. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's one or done, though, because if it's one and done, then I guess that's fine. But if it keeps going, why pin him clean?
Well, you know, that's what I mean. That's why it does matter, because if it is one and done, then what you've done is you've made your Intercontinental Champion look good. And if he's going to be the champion, that's fine. If it keeps going, that's the problem. Because then you're like, well, why should we care about this feud anymore? But like, I think that there's different types of heels. Like Charlotte winning clean was great because like she was like almost like the Triple H heel, who like you hate them but they can back it up. But Miz is not that type of heel. Like Miz
and also though Charlotte won with a little finagling there. She got the pin via a very weird roll up, a flash pin.
There was a finagle. Great words.
I love the word finagle.
There's a finagle, but the Miz has always been and should always be a chicken shit heel.
Exactly.
He plays it tremendously. But yeah, so it's, I guess we'll see where it goes. My fear was that they gave Apollo Crews the belt to give him personality. I don't think that's the answer. So
no, yeah. I think what bothered me about Miz not cheating to win, I'm not as bothered by it as David, but I am. It kind of annoys me in a way because that was another way that they could have told a story with Apollo Crews, right? Like if Miz cheated and was dastardly and, you know, really screwed over Apollo Crews, and that might give Apollo Crews some fire and some reason to care about something or be somebody with like a human personality.
But can't there also be a story of, you know, he went for the Intercontinental Championship and he lost clean. Like, he has no excuses. So he, like, it's not about him trying to pick himself back up and see where he goes. And
yeah, but they've been trying to tell that story already. Like, I mean,
and I'll tell you where he's going to go. He's going to go directly to Superstars until he's dead.
No, because SmackDown does main event and Raw does Superstars.
I love that Dave and I always get that wrong. And Sandra, you're like, how can people not know this? It's two shows.
It's not
that
hard.
I didn't even know main event was still a thing.
Sandra, there's 5 hours of television before you get to main event of Superstars. You know, most people don't even watch that.
I don't even have time for Stranger Things or anything.
I really want to watch Stranger Things. This weekend is not allowed that to happen.
No, this life is not allowing this to happen.
So here we go. Here was the match that I was very, very interested to see how it goes. It was AJ Styles versus John Cena. I don't think, and I was trying to think about it when I sent the tweet out, I don't think I've ever went as mental for a kick out as I did when AJ Styles kicked out from the Attitude Adjustment off the top rope. I thought that was it. I thought he was being pinned. Like, there were so many near falls, and I felt like at points that it was like, oh no, this is going to be like those Roman AJ matches where AJ, like, tries to do a million things to him, and then, like, he's just going to get pinned. And in the end, you know, he gets the forearm and pins him clean. AJ Styles beats John Cena clean in the middle. Sandra, for me, this was match of the night. But what did you think of this one?
I loved this match. Absolutely loved it. And, I mean, I think I would have loved it. No, that's a lie. I wouldn't have loved it so much if John Cena had won. But the match itself was, it was great all throughout, right? Like, they did trade a lot of false finishes to the point where it might have almost seemed like too much if they wouldn't have been pulling it off so well.
They executed it very well.
They executed it very well. And they had me on a bunch of the false finishes, like a bunch of them. And I like that it felt pretty evenly matched. It felt like both guys had a point to prove and they went all out and it was just, it was great. It had me out of my seat and yelling and invested the way wrestling should, right? And I think afterward was very, very interesting because AJ Styles did pin John Cena clean. And then John Cena, he looked like just fuck, like what just happened? Like, am I losing it? Like, what's going on? And he takes off the never give up armband thing and leaves it in the middle of the ring. And it feels very like he's going away again or something. And it's interesting. It's really interesting because it felt... We talked about how AJ Styles had to win this, right? To kind of cement a new era and to really like make himself and prove his point. And, you know, he's had kind of an up and down win loss record, but now he has a clean pin over John Cena. He's up on John Cena in this feud. And that's pretty unprecedented for a long time. Like since Punk, right? Is the last time that we had someone, well, Punk and Lesnar. Like that's pretty rare company to be in terms of having one up on John Cena in a feud. And I am excited for this to continue down the road, a long time down the road, not on Tuesday. But I don't think it will, because I mean, John Cena has looked sad or whatever when he loses matches like this, but this felt pretty, this felt like something. And I think John Cena's SummerSlam streak is a really interesting thing, because it seems like SummerSlam's kind of the time when John Cena has to reset and refocus and do something and either like go and get surgery or go film a show or go do something else and make room for new talent. And I think it's cool. And I think AJ Styles is absolutely, you know, phenomenal, I always say, but it's true. And I think he can absolutely carry the show. And I'm looking forward to see what he does on SmackDown. And I really hope he's champion soon.
David, one of the things coming out of SummerSlam that intrigued me the most, and I made sure to not message you about it, was your reaction to this. Because on this podcast, in pay-per-view reviews in the past, you have been very vocal about your displeasure of the way AJ Styles was presented in certain points, and you know, specifically the Roman Reigns matches before, and you were quite confident, I guess, maybe in the lead up to this, that John Cena was going to win. I'm aware that you watched this at like 2 a.m, so maybe you weren't as completely awake and aware, but yeah, I'm just intrigued. Tell me your thoughts on this whole thing.
It's kind of funny because, like, whenever you're so solidified that John Cena is going to win, you don't even bite for the false finishes. Mm-hmm. Like, you believe them so much. Like, after the AA off the top, I was just like, oh, well, that's that. And I went in to go get a drink, and then I heard the kick out, and I was like, wait, what? Oh, what? He kicked out? What? I was, like, so beside myself. I was like, no, that didn't happen. What? So I had to come back in and start watching again, and I was all like, yeah, I wish this match would get over by now, because I am rather sleepy. So, but joking aside, though, this was a career-defining moment for AJ Styles. Felt nice to have everything that he did vindicated from his past, and it felt nice for him to finally get a big pay-per-view win that actually mattered. So, yeah, I mean, this was easily my match of the night, by the way. I thought it was great. So I'm in your company there, Kenny.
I think the other thing that I loved about it was, and I'll be honest, I don't think any other match in this show got me anywhere near as emotionally invested.
Really. Yeah, yeah, did.
Like, but I think the thing, and I can't remember exactly what move that it happened, but when Styles, I think it might have been the second rope or top rope AA kick out. And Cena was in the corner looking at AJ Styles like,
it was.
How did you kick out of that? And like, don't get me wrong, John Cena is not the best actor in the world.
No, he's not. I found it kind of cheesy.
He over-eggs it, but I appreciated the attempt of what he was trying to do.
No doubt. My favorite part of this match was my wife's drunken rant about how John Cena now has an acting gig and he has to go off and pretend that. She's all like, is he going to get stretchered out that way he doesn't have to tell everybody he's going to go and film a thing like The Rock after he made fun of The Rock for doing it? Ha, he's a hypocrite. So that was really funny to me.
Val just hitting the zingers all night here.
Oh, she was laying in the Cena.
Now, here's what I want to ask you guys, because I am... You know, Sondra, you were talking about how he took the Never Give Up armband and left it in the ring, and then they focused in on it, and there was a big applause for Cena and all that sort of stuff. Now, somebody had said to me, my friend Andrew texted me today, said that he thought the commentary over this was really bad. That they kept talking over this sort of poignant moment. Was it as bad as he's making out to be?
I can't remember exactly how the commentary was. I mean, they were definitely talking a lot, and... I don't know. It was one of those moments where I think I was invested enough in it that I was tuning out the commentary.
Okay.
So it very well could have been that bad. It wasn't bad in the sense of like, it was noticeable to me enough to take me out of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I was still just kind of buzzing because AJ Styles had won. So I think I was just more excited about that. And also, I think maybe the problem is that I was having a conversation with the television out loud, so I didn't hear the commentary because I was being like, what does this mean and stuff? And I was talking to Mr. Sondra about it, so I just wasn't paying that much attention to what they were saying. I was more interested in what we were saying.
I'll tell you exactly what it means. It means that John Cena is going to come back whenever his television show wraps up or whatever it is he's filming. And he's going to beat the WWE champion, AJ Styles, for the title and submit his legacy in the record books. That's exactly what it means. And you know what? I'm okay with that. I think that that is a good story to tell.
At least John Cena, I've said this in the podcast before, John Cena for me had to put somebody over, and finally he has.
So, and I think it was the right guy to put over, because the next WWE champion is going to be AJ Styles.
Yeah, and we will get to why that's a fucking glorious idea.
Yeah.
Up next, we had John Stewart coming out to basically talk about he's glad that nobody came out and hit somebody with a chair. That was quite funny. That was, for me, the end of when he was funny on this show, sadly. I like Jon Stewart, and I know David loves him, but I just, like, the best tweet that I saw was from Jason Powell, and he said, I like Jon Stewart, I like wrestling, I like that Jon Stewart likes wrestling, but I need less of Jon Stewart in my wrestling. And I think that's kind of how I felt about it. I don't think it worked as well this year. The tag match with the New Day and the Club was fine for me. I'll be honest, it was very forgettable. The big moment was Big E's return when he saved Jon Stewart from getting his balls hit into the ring post, causing the DQ, and the New Day celebrate with Jon Stewart with some dancing at the end. Sandra, you first. What did you think of the whole placement of Jon Stewart with the New Day and the tag match and the fallout?
I'm a huge Jon Stewart fan, so honestly, I kind of loved this. And I think I even said on Twitter, like, I actually really enjoyed all of these shenanigans, despite everything I should believe about wrestling, because it seems like something that I should hate objectively, because it's a celebrity getting involved, and it's, you know, it's kind of really cheesy, and it's kind of dumb, but I just thought it was fun as it was going on, to be honest. That's kind of my reaction to it. The match was forgettable. I really didn't pay a lot of attention to it. It wasn't a match I was invested in, like, at all, actually. And I like the New Day, but this whole testicular humor thing just isn't really for me. So the whole buildup to it being based around Big E's balls is just kind of like, all right, this is a bit cringe, and it's just, it's not really my thing. So there was that, but I liked seeing Big E Langston come back. I liked his triumphant return. I was fine with it. It doesn't bother me, but it's not something that I'm overly excited about either. I like when celebrities that get involved in wrestling are huge fans, and you can tell that they are. I thought it was cool that his kid was there with him. I liked the backstage segment that he had with the authority figures and everything. So, I mean, I guess that's about it. It was a very inoffensive use of a celebrity if you have to get one involved, I guess, to me, because it was like a wacky, silly feud to begin with. It wasn't like he got involved in a serious thing. Like, I think it felt more forced and out of nowhere when he did hit John Cena with the chair.
True. There's somebody banging something in the hotel room upstairs. I do apologize, ladies and gentlemen, if you just hear
Hammer. I didn't know this podcast was going to be X-rated.
Son, I totally take that. Like, for us in the building, the Jon Stewart thing just didn't work. But I still like him, but it didn't work for us. David, I know you're a big fan of him. What did you think of Jon Stewart with the New Day, the match, and the fallout?
I think that a lot of people who are complaining need to put things in perspective. It was a comedian getting involved in a bad comedy match. How much worse could he really make the comedy? I mean, let's be honest. It wasn't like he was getting involved in a title match. Well, this was a title
match. It was a title match.
To be fair, though, he did make it better than the ball jokes. I'll give it that.
Yeah, like for real. How much worse was this? Here's the thing. It was a title match, but it wasn't presented like a title match. It was presented like a comedy match. They were making bad Vince McMahon humor. Go out there and make a bunch of testicle jokes. It'll pop the crowd. It didn't. Guess what? You know? So for me, I think the people complaining, it wasn't a great segment, but the people complaining, I think they need to put things in perspective. It's not like he went out and interrupted AJ and Cena. It's not like he went out and interrupted Finn and Rollins.
No, it was inoffensive. I think this was another example of something that could have been completely cut from the show, and you could have had Jon Stewart in the front row. you know,
I think if the show had to be this long, this was kind of a welcome break, because I'll be honest, after Cena AJ, I appreciated a chance to chill for a minute and not pay attention.
That's fair. I'm just thinking, you know, if you know, this show was 4 hours long, but I think there was a couple of matches you could have probably just taken off and made it 3 hours.
That would have been ideal.
Also, though, getting Jon Stewart involved, good publicity, you know.
Yeah, and
the WWE loves their publicity machine.
And we're gonna get to somebody who apparently is annoying a lot of fans by getting WWE some publicity in the main event. But up next was the match that really had to prove something. Dolph Ziggler, Dean Ambrose, Shane McMahon, Daniel Bryan came out to watch the match from ringside. Which it's funny because I met up with one of my friends last night, Dave, and he was like, "You love all that stuff, don't you? You love like authority figures and people sitting at ringside and shenanigans." And I was like, "Yeah, I do. I completely love that stuff. That's what I'm about." But Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler in the arena during the opening video, the fans booed Ambrose in the video.
It was very prominent, actually, that Ambrose was getting booed.
Yeah, they cheered. The fans in Brooklyn loved Dolph Ziggler. They were very behind, and I was behind Dolph Ziggler. Like, I've been enjoying what he was doing the last kind of month or so, and I desperately wanted these guys to nail it. I desperately did, and they just didn't. It was painfully average for me, and it just took, you know, a dirty deeds. That was it. Dean Ambrose retains. That's it. I was fighting for this match to be, like, I sent a tweet out and I said, you know, and I stand by it. Like, I sent a tweet out after the Sasha match saying, you know, the card's stacked, so I think we should just, you know, try and enjoy the card for how stacked it is and how good the matches are, or should be. And then I sent a tweet out during this match saying, their goal in this match should be to make the company regret putting them this low down the card. And that's got nothing to do with me and my enjoyment, but I'm saying from those guys' perspectives, that should be what they were doing. But Sondra, you are Mrs. SmackDown at Inside the Ropes. Dean Ambrose, Dolph Ziggler, talk us through it.
Painfully underwhelming, basically. I mean, it's exactly what you said. They had a point to prove, and in my opinion, they didn't prove anything except that they proved my point that Dean Ambrose might be really great at building to matches, but when you get to the matches, they're not that great, right? I mean, this is another classic example of Dolph Ziggler showing some fire and stuff before a match, and then just, it wasn't great. It was perfectly fine, but it felt like maybe the main event of an episode of SmackDown, not the, you know, a main event title picture scene that's being played out on SummerSlam. It just felt average. The wrestling was okay, it was fine. I mean, Dean Ambrose matches are never going to light my world on fire anyway, but this especially just, it was kind of boring and it was kind of tough to get through. And like you, I mean, I was kind of behind Dolph Ziggler until I rewatched parts of this back and then noticed his trousers, in which case I resume my opinion of let's just throw Dolph Ziggler into the sun 100% because he had the Gadsden flag on his trousers and I'm just not okay with that. So I don't understand what he's going for there. Like, I just can't. With Dolph Ziggler and Dean Ambrose, I just can't do it anymore. Like, I was actually, you listen to the stuff we've been doing this week. Listen to the, you know, previous SmackDown summaries and stuff. I was actually getting kind of into this Dean Ambrose-Dolph Ziggler feud hesitantly because this is what ends up happening with Dean Ambrose way too often is I'm just underwhelmed and it just wasn't great, and I am so ready for a new champion. I think it was interesting that the crowd was booing Dean Ambrose, and I think they should be booing Dean Ambrose because he's absolutely not the babyface in this situation. Dean Ambrose has been kind of a dick the whole time, right? And in the match, he was kind of a cocky, arrogant dick, and I'm so lukewarm on him again. I just want him to go away.
Guys, can I go ahead and interject here? I've got some breaking news on Twitter.
Sure.
Dolph Ziggler has been suspended for 30 days for a wellness violation.
Really?
Yeah. And it's kind of odd that I'm reading this while we talk about this match. Yeah, that's all it says. It's from WWE. So 30 days, Dolph Ziggler. Little telling. Maybe that played, probably not. I would imagine not. But, you know, let's just go ahead and throw it out there. Perhaps it played a part. And maybe they knew ahead of time and they played a part in the outcome. perhaps. You know what? Scratch all of that. Apparently this from 2008.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, I was going to say, because Dolph Ziggler literally just tweeted out 4 minutes ago about his Colonel KFC commercial. I was like, it doesn't seem like something you do when you've been suspended.
Would you rather be suspended for 30 days than do the Colonel deal, though? Yeah, I think so, too. That was my other thing, too, is like they did that Colonel thing, right? And they dressed him up like the Kentucky Fried Chicken Colonel Sanders. For anyone who's unaware, I don't know why you would be, but we do have worldly listeners, so we have to explain things. Basically looking like an old man, white hair, you know, and then he trotted out and he fought The Miz in a chicken costume. And that was your number one contender for the WWE Championship.
Yeah, they didn't film this prior to him becoming number one contender for the WWE Championship. They filmed this while he was number one contender for the WWE Championship.
Yeah.
Against the Intercontinental Champion.
Who the Intercontinental Champion, who was in a chicken costume.
David, what did you think of this match?
This was just your standard SmackDown fare, you know what I mean? So this was just like something they would give away for free on TV. This is what I expected from it, you know? I mean, it's sad but true. I had low expectations going in for this. I wasn't buying it as much as you guys were. And it's one of those instances where I was right, and I'm sad that I was right, because I really used to like Dolph Ziggler a whole lot. And his fiery promos, you know, he was really landed in there hard on SmackDown, and it just felt kind of forced to me. I never really bought it as much as other people did, you know. And I don't know. I think Sandra nailed it though. Dean Ambrose is one of those guys who can talk you into buying a ticket and then make you regret buying the ticket once you do.
Up next, we had the six-woman tag team match from SmackDown. It was Becky Lynch, Naomi, and Carmella. Naomi coming out, showing you that if you want to take drugs, that's how you're going to dance. Then we had Natalya and Alexa Bliss came out, and then Eva Marie's music hit. And
it's just the best thing, isn't it? I was so glad to hear Eva Marie's music play. And then I was like, oh, this is awesome. Are they going to announce the suspension, or are they going to just make another excuse for her? And they made another excuse for her because she's suffering from stress brought on by hostile WWE fans and will be vacationing in the British Isles. It's just so perfect for Eva Marie. So perfect.
And then her replacement was Nikki Bella, who got a big, big reception. I'd had a couple of vodkas, so I did the Bella twiddle. You know, fuck it. I'm going to make a bold statement. I was more into this match than the Dolph Ziggler-Dean Ambrose match.
That's not a bold statement. That's just you being able to know what's going on a show.
Sandra, you know, you're a big proponent of women's wrestling. We all are, but you're a woman as well, so that's a twofold thing. What did you think of this one?
I loved this. I thought it was great. I mean, was it going to be a classic match that we talk about for ages and years to come? No, not necessarily. Was it fun? Yeah. Like, did all the women get to kind of show what they can do? Yeah. Did they get a lot of time? Yeah, they did. This was really great for what it was. It was awesome to see Nikki Bella come back. Super glad Nikki Bella is going to be on SmackDown. Very much looking forward to her being a part of the SmackDown women's division. I think we need her. I think she could have some really awesome matches. I think that, you know, Becky and Nikki is a feud that I think could be fantastic if they decide to go that way. I mean, she came back and joined the heels team, so it looks like maybe she'll be a heel, even though she was acting pretty much like a babyface the entire time and in her return promo backstage on the Fallout thing. But who knows? I mean, it's Nikki Bella, and maintaining the heel face dynamic has always been kind of an issue for the Bellas anyway. I'm hoping we'll probably get to see more of what they're going to be doing on Tuesday, and I'm kind of curious to see the fallout from it and what they do with her now that she's back. But I thought she looked great. I thought, I mean, really, I don't think there was a woman in this match who looked bad.
No, they all look pretty competent. Becky was on fire.
They kept me engaged, and I think they all got to show their personality. It was great to see Alexa looking like a little evil Spitfire too. And I think this is a good way to introduce the women. I mean, it's kind of, if you compare it to the tag match that was on the pre-show, that just was kind of short and felt like a clusterfuck. This felt like six women. who have something to prove, wanting to show their personality and their character. And it didn't feel super forced, I guess. It felt like a division trying to establish itself, which I think is the best compliment I can give it.
David.
I'm not happy to see Nikki Bella back. I hate the Bellas. They're just terrible people. I'm not a fan. But beyond that, I mean, I enjoyed Naomi's entrance. I thought that was pretty cool. it's nothing new. We've seen it on TV before. But
you know, ecstasy is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. To me, if you can put as many drugs into your body as possible, no, I'm joking. this was fine. It was good. I thought that Alexa Bliss looked really good here. I think Alexa Bliss is going to be the breakout out of all these girls. That's how I feel about it. So I think that she's, you know, she's young. She's got a good career path ahead of her. She's going to be the one that comes up and ends up playing a good heel. I think she's just a natural heel too. You know, she's got the look. But this was a fun match. I liked the finish. It felt very concise too. Like Sandra said, it wasn't very clusterfucky. You know, it felt like they had the timing down.
It had a purpose as well.
Yeah. Absolutely. It was a deserving part of the card, I think.
Yeah, it was a showcase for the women of SmackDown, so good for them. Up next, we have the Universal title match. Now, Stephanie and Mick Foley come out. They unveil the new WWE Universal Championship, which is essentially the world title, but in red. I've never been in an arena where a championship belt unveiling has been booed so mercifully by a crowd. They hated this belt. They did not like it. I think they should have, in hindsight, just unveiled it on Raw, and then maybe people wouldn't have had a big deal with it, because it became kind of the story of some of the match, unfortunately. But Finn came out, made his big demon entrance. People were going apeshit in the arena for it. They had a 20-minute match, really good match, and in the end, Finn Balor hits the coup de grace to become the champion. Funnily, interesting note is that he was told at ringside to not raise the belt when he was celebrating. You know, when he does his arm thing, like, he was told to just put one arm up instead, because they just didn't want the crowd to further boo the belt.
Well, because when he went and picked up the belt, they booed him.
Yeah, well, they booed the belt, and then about 5 seconds later, they cheered Finn again. But it was almost like they had to get across that they hated the belt. I don't hate the belt. I mean, I don't love it, but
I don't think it's that bad.
It could have been worse, you know, like, it could have been worse. Sandra. The belt, the match, the decision to have Finn Balor win the entrance, all of it, what did you think?
This is one of those instances where I was very, very upset with the crowd. Very upset with the crowd. Because this was a situation where not only did the crowd booing the belt kind of take away from the match a little bit, or, you know, seem like the crowd just trying to be an asshole. And I know that you were in the crowd, so I'm sorry. But the way it came across on TV, like, and I saw people on Twitter saying this too, that the vehemence with which the crowd was booing the belt, which I don't think is that bad. I mean, is it really any uglier than that spinny thing John Cena carried around for 10 years? No. Like, I don't think it's that bad. And it's certainly not bad enough to boo two guys who are in the ring working their asses off when these are two guys you like, right? Like, is this really the message that we want to send when Finn Balor and Seth Rollins, like, how indicative of a new era is this match even happening? And then for Finn Balor to win it, I mean, even though Seth Rollins is totally my guy, but like, for Finn Balor to win it to cement a new era, like, you can say new era all you want, but this proves it, right? And what kind of message does it send when you're more concerned about the look of a belt you don't like than something that you've asked for? Like, this is the type of wrestling crowd who's been begging for change and begging for things to be new and different and, you know, give us new stars, build a star, right? And in this star crowning moment, you're booing because you think the red looks silly and you're not cheering this guy for his effort. Like, I think it's offensive, honestly. And I mean, I guess, I know that we've had the conversation plenty of times of, if you buy a ticket, you have the right to chant whatever you want, or like, if they're not investing you in something. But are you telling me that Finn Balor and Seth Rollins with that match wasn't something to get a crowd invested? really? Because if you're not there, like, if you're not enjoying that kind of thing, it's not like they were having a bad match. They were having a great match. So, like...
From being in the arena, I mean, first of all, I wasn't booing the bells. So just to, well, I didn't, and I'll be honest, I booed it when it first was unveiled because I didn't, I didn't really like it at the beginning. I was half cut, so I was just joining in. But as soon as the match began, you know, I stopped. But I think the thing is, I agree that they shouldn't have been booing, but I know Seth Rollins sent out a tweet saying that Brooklyn really let him down and all that sort of stuff. And I do completely agree with what you're saying, Sondra, and that, you know, people should not be so hung up on a belt. But by like halfway through, I think the crowd were into the match.
They got the crowd back on their side.
And like, I find it difficult to feel sorry for people who are paid a phenomenal amount of money to engage an audience. You know, like, that's the job, that's the gig. And it's a harder job in New York, and I think they were given a very hard job because of that belt thing. You know, because like Brooklyn in New York is a very old school crowd. So they want tradition, you know, that's they don't want another version of that big shiny belt that you can sell at merchandise stands and make $500 a pop from. It's not what they want. So I think there's blame on a lot of surfaces. Like, there's blame on the crowd because they should have just let it go, like, without a doubt. I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I did laugh when the crowd were like they were engaged in the match from where I was. But like at one point, Balor and like Rollins were on the outside, and like they passed the belt and they booed as they passed the belt because the belt was in shot. But then they were right back into it. So from my point of view, the second half of the match, it seemed like the crowd were into the match. I don't know if it didn't come across that way in TV, or maybe I was in a section where more people were into the match than into the belt. But
it seemed like Finn and Seth won them back.
Hmm.
Sorry, David. What did you say?
On TV, they were just shitting on the match constantly. That's what it looked like.
Okay, by the end of it, I will say they were into the match, but it was
too little,
it was
too late.
Too little, too late, and it was very distracting for the beginning of the match.
Yeah,
I think that's part of the issue too. Is like, yeah, you might have the right to chant whatever you want, but if you're ruining it for everyone around you, that makes you an asshole.
Yes. Exactly. You have a right to vote for Donald Trump, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to judge
you. Here's the thing. I'm playing devil's advocate. Now, remember, I like the belt and I wasn't booing for the belt. Let's just clarify things in as I'm having it. But I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. Shouldn't WWE know that when they're in New York City in front of their most hostile crowd, bar Chicago, that when they put that belt out there and have it unveiled by Stephanie, that people are going to shit all over it? Like, is there not part of it that they should have just known to, like, they should have unveiled it on Raw and made it like a passing thing rather than, because the way they did it was both general managers come out and they say, here we go, this is the real world championship, blah, 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 blah. You know, I almost felt they were going to take it off and have a winged eagle belt or something. Like, that was the kind of the build up that it was getting. You know, it's almost like your friend coming up to you and saying, like, so you know how we're going out on Saturday night? And we're going out for this big party? Well, I can't make it straight away. Like, it's one of those weird things where they were building up to not give the people in that arena what they wanted. So I think that part of the blame is on them, but part of the blame is also on the crowd. That, like, I get that they all booed the belt if they didn't like it. It's fine. And I get that at the beginning of the match, it was still kind of, you know, going into the match. But by halfway through, they should have shut the fuck up.
And it took at least until halfway through. I mean, the chants just weren't stopping. And it did take me out of the match. And that's really unfortunate. And I also just worry about the way it's going to come across to the company. Like,
yeah.
Does that mean that the crowd isn't invested in these guys? Because it seems like they have two stars on their hands in Seth Rollins and Finn Balor.
I don't think they are going to see that way from the perspective of, like, Finn Balor was in Good Morning America today.
He was, but I mean, that was scheduled anyway. But I'm just saying, like, crowd perception can make a difference. And if there's someone that, you know, the company might be thinking about getting behind, but they're not, you know, Roman Reigns level secure that they're like, this is going to be our guy going forward. What's going to help? Like, what's going to help getting the guy cheered? Like, when he goes and picks up his championship, which is a big crowning achievement and a star-making moment for Finn Balor, for people to boo him in that moment, I just thought was really uncalled for.
Very disrespectful. Yeah. Imagine. Here's a good analogy for this. Imagine that The Rock versus Hulk Hogan in Toronto was for that title. and instead of having that wonderful crowd atmosphere that completely made that match, if you mute that match, that is a horrible match. that if you put that sound on, it is one of the greatest wrestling matches you will ever watch. Imagine that crowd for that match. It would completely ruin that wonderful wrestling spectacle that we all love. And that's the way that this crowd did this match. This crowd literally knocked the star off of this match because there was no atmosphere whatsoever. And they ought to be ashamed. They're would not going to be because they are the same people who would scream and cry and whine about a female Ghostbusters. Like, that's the entire thing that I was thinking was, wow, what a bunch of entitled adult men band babies.
I think part of the problem, and I don't disagree with anything either you're saying at all, just to clarify, I think part of it is also down to how WWE have changed the way they present wrestling in the last 5 years. I've said it before, you know, like John Cena coming out on Raw saying, are we entertaining you? Putting everything in the crowd's hands. Like in 1998, when Steve Austin got the big belt that took over in the Winged Eagle, a lot of people didn't like that belt. But
yeah, I thought it was stupid, I'll be honest. But I wouldn't throw a hissy fit about it either.
But the point is, they were never asking you what you thought of it. They were just giving you the belt. Whereas, like, this was like, right, guys, we've got a new belt. We want to know what you think. Here we are in the ring. We're going to unveil it and let us know what you think of our new belt that we have now got. Like, the way that's playing with fire with a crowd that, you know, like you say, maybe there are a lot of, like, female Ghostbuster hating people in that audience, which, you know, is a shame that they are those people. But I think there is a bit of the blame to be put on WWE for that. I think that there has to be, but I think the crowd as well.
I think in hindsight, they could have unveiled it on the pre-show like they did with the women's belt at WrestleMania. Like to gauge the crowd reaction to it. And then if the crowd gets so hostile about something so silly, then maybe downplay that and play up the match.
The thing that frustrates me is, like, the crowd should absolutely be called out for what they did, but, like, WWE should also be thinking, oh, do you know what? Maybe we should have, like, done a little kind of, survey or something of, like, what people think of this new belt. And then from that decided, is this a good idea to put this on right before in a big unveiling?
Kenny, I have a question for you. What the hell were they chanting? Because I noticed, like, 5 different chants, and I couldn't make any of them out.
I heard that belt sucks. That belt sucks. I heard, we want some new belt. Hey, we want some new belt. That belt's stupid. Clap, 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 clap.
All while these two stars are trying to create art in the middle of a ring.
Yep.
Just sickening.
Yep, those were the chants that were going on during Finn Balor versus Seth Rollins on the main roster in the Demons match debut at SummerSlam. Yep.
And it looked great, too. It looked really cool.
So did you guys, apart from, if we take crowd out of it, match quality, good, great, okay, what do we think?
I thought it was great. I don't think it was a classic, but I think the wrestling was great. I definitely wasn't disappointed in the match.
David?
A little too many false finishes for my liking, which is kind of funny considering I loved AJ and Cena. Again, we can hark back to being a hypocrite. I'll gladly accept that.
Sometimes when it works, it works. And when it doesn't, it doesn't. And it's going to be subjective.
Exactly. It's sort of like that weird sex thing, right? Okay. Sometimes you might be into it.
I dread where you're going with that.
Sometimes you might be into it. And then other times you're just like, no, not today. It's not for me. That was sort of like the false finishes, right? So for Cena and AJ, it perfectly worked. But I think I had already gotten my fill of that earlier in the night. I think that was ultimately what it was. But joking aside, this match would have been a lot better with a better crowd, but I thought that they did a good job. It wasn't a classic, and I don't think, even if they would have put on the best match of the night, it wasn't going to be a classic with that crowd. So, you know.
I think Finn Balor did the right thing, but, like, so with Seth Rollins being the heel, he can say on Twitter, you know, Brooklyn, you disappointed me and all that, but I think it was right for Finn Balor to not say anything. Like, it was better for him to just sort of, you know, like, when he was on Good Morning America this morning, he was, like, talking up, like, you know, the crowd were electric all night, I was really happy to win the belt, and he just sort of concentrated on the positiveness of him winning, and what that meant for him, you know, because
that's exactly what he should do. Yeah.
That's what he should do. But yeah.
And also, according to F4W Online and Dave Meltzer, it looks like Finn Balor got injured last night.
I saw speculation that his arm was in a sling after the show.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess we'll find out tonight on Raw. Also,
they're kind of worried that a surgery may come into play. So fingers crossed that Finn Balor can continue his reign as the WWE Universal Champion.
And also, just to say, the Dudley boys have just put out some tweets basically saying they're going to say goodbye tonight on Raw. So it looks like it was a one-year deal. Or Bubba Ray's going to turn heel. And that's, but something's happening with the Dudleys on Raw tonight, and they seem to be saying goodbye. So
good to know.
Okay, Roman Reigns versus Rusev was supposed to happen. It didn't happen. Roman Reigns ended up, as he was coming out, Rusev starts attacking him with the steps. They go all around the ring. Reigns is tossing him over the barricade, hitting him with a chair, injuring Rusev. Then he comes back and spears Rusev. Crowd are chatting one more time, and it's the one time where Roman Reigns couldn't do something that the crowd wanted him to do. He had to just go to the back. So this became like an angle more than a match. I was okay with it, just from the perspective I was kind of tired. I was kind of just ready for the main event, and Rusev got to keep the belt, so, you know, happy days for me. David, what do you think of the angle that they did here to, I guess, set up this continuing?
I'll be happy whenever Rusev actually looked strong against Roman Reigns for once. Beyond that, this was fine. It should have been pre-show fodder, though, if this was all they were going with it. I don't know, the second to the last ordeal before the main event that ends up being this. And, you know, I mean, they had like this car crash deal, and then immediately after that they sent out the walking car crash Brock Lesnar. I don't know, to me it felt kind of jumbled and too much of one thing in one corner of the room, so to speak.
Sandra, what did you think of Alexander Rusev and his angle with Roman?
Yeah, this is the thing that if we want to talk about placement on the card, I had no idea why this happened right before the main event with the way things ended up there. I didn't realize that the bell never rang the first, like, as I was watching through this. So when they called it off and they said, you know, Alexander Rusev can't continue or whatever, then I was like, what the fuck? How does a ref stoppage not mean a belt change here? What is going on? But then a lot of people pointed out to me on Twitter that the bell never rang and the match never got started and whatever. It left me very lukewarm. Like, knowing that the match didn't start made me a lot less annoyed about it, because at least it logically made sense. This came across to me like a double turn. And I don't think that that's what they're intending. But I don't even think it's just my love for Rusev and my toward Roman Reigns. This felt very much like a double turn to me, because the promo that Rusev and Lana gave backstage prior to the match was, it wasn't even anti-America or whatever from what I remember. It was just, you know, that guy tried to dishonor my wife, and, you know, when Lana went into the cake and all of this kind of stuff. And I got real tired of this angle during that cake segment, because I know you guys didn't hate it as much as I did. I thought it was dreadful. And I really just don't like the honor of a woman being at stake in matches, and those sorts of implications are just not things that are going to make me invested in a story or on the side of one Roman Reigns, right? And so, I mean, Rusev and Lana didn't seem overly heelish here. And then, yeah, Alexander Rusev did start the brawl and start the big fight because he wanted to get at Roman, right? Because Roman had disrespected him and his family and his wife, and Roman Reigns has disrespected everything, basically. So it makes sense. I like that Alexander Rusev would go right after Roman Reigns and try to kick his ass, because it makes sense. Like, I'd be pissed. And Roman was so relentless, and then spearing him again after the refs have already called off the match and everything, it just felt very brutal. And I was like, and the crowd is cheering Roman Reigns for the first time in since the Shield, and they're cheering him for doing this. And I feel like maybe there's just some disconnect with Brooklyn crowd and me. I just don't understand. Like,
I think the reason that they were cheering him is because if you look at any time Roman Reigns has been cheered, it's been when he's been like a badass in situations. And, you know, if you look at the whole situation with Rusev, he absolutely is the heel of the situation. Like, there's no doubt about it. But, like, to, you know, like when he beat up Triple H after TLC, it seems to be whenever he does like a sort of prolonged attack around the ring and shows no remorse and doesn't cut promos. Like, when he does that, the crowd seem to get a little bit behind him, but it never sticks. So, like, tomorrow, I would imagine, or tonight, sorry, I'd imagine Rusev's going to get cheered again and Reigns will get booed. It'll be back to status quo.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess I just, and maybe it's just because I don't see Alexander Rusev as the bad guy here at all. At least when Roman Reigns was beating up Triple H, like, Triple H was supposed to be more of the bad guy in the situation, right? Like the evil authority figure. And Rusev's just trying to defend his wife, man. Like,
right. Yeah, that's my thing with it is, I don't know. Like,
what, because he's not from here, he's the bad guy? Like, I'm sorry.
I feel like it's being presented for a bunch of Trump voters. Like, I really do. And how much do you think that crowd would have popped if Roman would have laid his hands on Lana? Like, that's disturbing to me, because they would have gone through the roof. You can't convince me otherwise.
No, I think you're probably right. I don't know. But it's just, it left me lukewarm, I guess, is what I'll say. But I'm glad that Alexander Rusev's still the champion. So that's the good thing coming out of it.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, main event time. Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton. This was what went on last. I actually think this was the best decision of going on last, because you're not putting like one championship as the more important championship. You're actually saying, you know, the inner promotional match is the main event, and both the championships were another place. Because I think the last thing that SmackDown needed was for like their title to go on halfway and then the Raw title to main event. So I was happy with the placement of the main event. But Brock Lesnar, Randy Orton, and the post-match shenanigans. David, what did you think on this polarizing match?
It was kind of just a retread from 2 years ago, I kind of thought. It reminded me a lot of the Cena thing, and I enjoyed it a lot better whenever I saw it the first time, you know? And I guess the story is that Brock Lesnar is just a monster and he can't be stopped and this and that. But I have a bit of a strange opinion, you guys, and I realized it during this match. I want to see Brock Lesnar lose. I'm kind of done with him being a monster and an attraction. I want him to lose now.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm trying to process it internally and figure out if this is the intent, like they want me to want him to lose, and if so, that's great. But if they're just wanting to fan the flames and keep it going, then I don't think it's a good thing. So time will tell on that, but I'm ready for Brock Lesnar to lose now.
Sondra, what did you think of this this match and the outcome and the post-match shenanigans?
I actually really enjoyed this. I loved it. I loved the way it played out. I thought it was messy, and I thought it was violent, and I thought, like, I mean, up until Randy Orton's head got split open, I was really into it. Like, really, really into it. And then I was still intrigued for different reasons, because Randy Orton was gushing blood, and I just didn't want him to die or whatever. But
oh Lord, Sandra, you need to see the match with JBL and Eddie Guerrero.
I've heard.
Oh my God. Now, if you want to talk about being fearful for someone's safety, holy shit, go watch that. Oh my God.
I probably won't.
Sorry to interrupt. But trust me, it's an amazing match.
Okay. But no, I mean, I really liked the violent nature of it. I liked the fire. I thought they were telling a good story with it. I think that, you know, Randy Orton hitting the RKO on the table was kind of an interesting turning point. And then he did that incredibly messy, like, apron DDT thing, or ropes DDT or whatever he calls it. And, like, Brock sort of just landed on his head and it looked super messy. And it was like the women's match in that I like when wrestling looks messy and when it doesn't look like it's just a clean, you know, choreographed thing sometimes. And I like sometimes when it does look clean and choreographed. I like both, though. And I think for this situation, it feeling like a fight and like a beatdown was important. And I mean,
I think the one thing we can agree on is a Brock Lesnar match should never look coordinated.
No, it shouldn't. It absolutely shouldn't, because, you know, and I'll be honest, like when Randy Orton was gushing blood and everything, I wasn't sure if he was selling or if he was knocked out or what had happened. I mean, I didn't think that, and especially when I went back and watched it, like the way Brock keeps going back and attacking him as he's gushing blood and everything, I was like, okay, well, this seems like it was the plan to split Randy Orton open. I don't know if it was the plan to split him open quite to that level or whatever. But I mean, if it would have been a legitimate, like, oh shit, this wasn't supposed to happen, we're stopping this because we fear for Randy Orton's safety, I don't think Brock Lesnar would have gone back and continued beating him to quite that extent. But it did just kind of call back to what Paul Heyman always says, you know, Brock Lesnar does what Brock Lesnar wants to do. And I kind of like that the mystique of it was this supposed to happen? Was it not? This looked really violent. That was definitely a legit splitting him open with those elbows. Like, Brock Lesnar was beating the shit out of Randy Orton. And I think that's the mystique of Brock Lesnar. And I think he's a big old monster heel now. And the story from here, right, is that he can't be controlled. And we're going to have to see where it goes. But I was into it the whole time. I really was. I thought it was a weird way to end the pay-per-view, because it seems like especially WrestleMania and SummerSlam often don't like to go off the air with this kind of uncertainty or this kind of like down feeling, or like it felt very weird, which made the mystique of was this planned, was this not, did they have to stop it early, kind of prominent, right? Because it just kind of felt off, and it felt like everyone was like, holy shit. And Randy Orton's head was running. It wasn't just dripping. It was running like a faucet. So it was uncomfortable, but it was uncomfortable in a way that definitely intrigued me. And to everyone who says, well, I don't like Brock Lesnar, and not necessarily what you're saying, David, you want to see him lose, but you know, like some people were saying, no, I don't like Brock Lesnar. I hate him. You know, he's the worst. He goes into business for himself. He da 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 da. Like, it seems kind of like that's what you're supposed to think at this point, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's the story. That's the entire story. Like, that's why he F5's Shane McMahon. Because you can't control him because he's a big old monster. And, you know, in story, like even Paul Heyman, the Advocate, he can't control Brock Lesnar because he's sitting there going, Brock, what did you do? What did you do?
Heyman's so good there, isn't he?
So good. So good. And I was into this start to finish. I guess I maybe understand people who weren't, but I mean, even just the match itself up until the end and all the speculation and controversy, I thought it was great.
I have so much to say about this match. So the thing that has struck me in the last 24 hours is so many people tweeting me about their either disdain for this match or their boredom of Brock Lesnar or the fact they hate Brock Lesnar or that he is going into business for himself. All these different things. And I think I've figured out some stuff. Just tell me what you guys think. So everybody wanted Goldberg at the end, right? That was basically what the crowd wanted, right?
Sure.
Yeah, people were chanting Goldberg. I mean, I don't know why you would want that, but yeah.
Here's the problem with WWE. NXT is... You're programmed at NXT to not expect any run-ins in any match at any point. You're just programmed to be like, these are going to be really good main events. That's it. That's the end. The expectation level ends there. On the main roster, every single month, people are tweeting about who's going to return? What if this happens? What if this happens? What if that? So they fantasy book all this stuff. And then they're always disappointed when all their fantasy booking doesn't come true. So, like, this crowd had decided that if Goldberg did not come out at the end, that this was a disappointment. That it wasn't what they wanted. And I just feel like people, it's like the same thing with like when AJ Styles had the match with Roman Reigns. Every month it was like, people were like, because they had phenomenal main event matches. And people were like, oh, no, I didn't like it because the AJ and the club didn't get together. But that was the whole, it had to be the AJ and the club. If that didn't happen, they weren't going to enjoy it. So it feels like there's this expectation level with fans that they're getting, and if they don't get it, they're just not going to be happy. That's one of the things. The other thing is, this match to me was clearly Brock Lesnar turning heel properly. Like, because before, he's been a babyface, really. Like, when he fought Dean Ambrose, it was like, he was turning heel here, though. That's what this was. And, you know, I totally get the whole ethos of, like, you know, what Paul Heyman's saying about, you know, Brock Lesnar does what Brock Lesnar needs to do and all that sort of stuff. But for anyone who actually thinks that Randy Orton being busted open, that Brock Lesnar would really be allowed in a wrestling environment to go into business for himself and make Randy Orton bleed with no prior planning and then continue to attack him with WWE not having any knowledge this was going to happen, makes you an idiot. But that would never happen. But the fact that people are questioning it means that he did a good job. And they did a good job in telling that story, I think.
Well, I think that's, like, the fact that it made me kind of wonder and speculate and go, wow, this is cool. And I love the fact that they made me wonder and speculate. But especially with the post-match stuff, no. Like, there's no way that this wasn't, at least to some extent, planned.
And the other thing I realized is with Brock Lesnar matches is every time there's a Brock Lesnar match, you get a pocket of fans, and I don't know how big they are, because, you know, people that tweet me that, I don't know how indicative that is of what portion of the audience, but I feel like maybe it's like, if you've never watched UFC and you've never enjoyed UFC in any way, maybe Brock Lesnar style matches are never going to be for you, for the most part. There's obviously going to be exceptions, but like, because like you guys were talking about earlier, Brock Lesnar, he couldn't have come back from UFC as a fighter and just started doing choreographed wrestling matches again.
Brock Lesnar shouldn't be tying up and doing a bunch of headlocks, and, you know, that's not how it should work.
Yeah, so people are like, oh, he only does punches and kicks and suplexes and FIs. It's like, yeah, because that's what beats people. Like, he's there.
That's the thing, though. Like, that... For some wrestling fans, they can't see the forest for the trees. They don't understand the point of wrestling. It's not to entertain you. The point of a wrestling match is to win.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And I think that the story of this match was actually really good. The story of this match was, you've got Randy Orton, who is, you know, he could be argued as the top star of SmackDown. You can make that argument for him.
And especially now that Cena's off filming a TV show.
Exactly. Right. And he got destroyed in the end. Like, he could not do it. He couldn't get past Brock Lesnar. Now, even after two RKOs. The key is, you know, and everybody's going to be asking this question, who is the man to finally take down Brock Lesnar? Now, for me, it can't be somebody from the past. It just can't. It can't be The Rock. It can't be The Undertaker. It has to be somebody who is there. It doesn't need to be somebody who's there every single week, but somebody who's going to be able to be on television regularly and sort of be able to take that win and do something with it. The Shane McMahon thing terrifies me, like, I'll be honest, because first of all, when he came out, my immediate thought was, please F5 him. Please F5 Shane McMahon. Like,
yeah.
And I like Shane McMahon. Like, I like him. Like, when he came out earlier, I was like, oh yeah, Shane, great. I like him. But here's the worrying thing is, I think Shane McMahon Brock Lesnar match is more of a draw than a Dean Ambrose Brock Lesnar match. I think Shane McMahon's more of a draw, but that's, you know, another story. But I feel
that's another thing is, do you really think it's setting up something with Shane McMahon, or is it just setting up that Brock Lesnar F5'd an authority figure, and that's the only authority figure that he can F5? He's not going to F5 Mick Foley, because Mick Foley would break. Daniel Bryan is clearly not able to be F5'd because his brain is broken. And he's not going to F5 Stephanie, even though I'd kind of love to see it, to be honest. But,
oh,
like,
God, wouldn't it be good?
It would be good, but they're not going to have him F5 Stephanie. Shane's the only authority figure there is available to F5, and so it doesn't necessarily have to be setting up a program, right?
But how quickly did Shane get up? Shane wasn't playing the authority figure that had been taken down. Shane was playing the tough guy that got taken out and was getting back up. He didn't play the authority figure after it.
That's something I despised about it, I'll be honest.
Like, because here's the thing, like, Sandra, you don't have this history, whereas David and I do. I'm going to take you back to a simpler time, Sandra.
Okay.
In 2003, right? And Kane was wearing his mask, and it was like a shitey version of his mask, and he'd been relegated to like a tag team thing, and wasn't really doing it. So anyway, he had a match with Triple H in Madison Square Garden, actually, in June of 2003, where he lost his mask. And that he finally was unveiled, and like, you know, they always said he had scars, and it turned out.
Is this when we found out the scars were emotional?
Yeah, emotional scars that he had. Well, I was about to get emotional scars from what occurred. So Kane came back. Now he was like, it was terrifying, and I was like 18, so like, I didn't really have any reason to be terrified. But like the way they presented him was tremendous. Like he was being brought to the arena in shackles because they didn't want to have him unleashed on the roster because of what he would do to them.
So he was treated like the monster Matanza Cueto?
Yes, pretty much. Michael Myers in the Rob Zombie remake.
Okay. Like,
so he was like demolishing everybody. He chokeslammed Raw General Manager Eric Bischoff off the stage. He battered Rob Van Dam within an inch of his life. He tombstoned Linda McMahon on the top of the
I know that's like
stage.
Your favorite thing.
She sells it like a motherfucker. He set Jim Ross on fire, right? That's all the stuff that he did. Like, he was essentially the top heel in the company. Like, he was unstoppable. Nobody could stop Kane. Kane was the main event. There was nobody that could touch him. Who was the man to defeat him and stop him?
Shane McMahon.
And that's where my... Like, I really like Shane McMahon. And I really like when he's involved and stuff, but the part of Shane McMahon that I'm not as big a fan of is that part. Is the part where he is booked to take down Kane. He is booked to...
The McMahon part of Shane McMahon, then.
The McMahon part of Shane McMahon that sometimes sadly comes out. 2009, he came back and easily disposed of Legacy so he could get to Randy Orton, and then almost beat Randy Orton before he had a match with Triple H at WrestleMania. So there's a terrified part of me that goes, oh God, they're not going to have Shane beat Brock Lesnar, are they? But I don't think they are. I think you're going to get a Shane-Brock Lesnar match where Shane's competitive, but I think Brock's going to beat him. And do you know what? I actually think it'd probably be a really good match, heat-wise and stuff, as long as Brock Lesnar beats him. Like, that has to happen.
I feel like, for me, the dynamic is wrong, though, because I don't like Shane McMahon anymore. So, again, it's just I just feel very disconnected from all of this, because I haven't liked what Shane McMahon's been doing on SmackDown all that much. Like, he's just been kind of a prick, so...
Especially like, taking away Heath Slater's contract.
I know.
But I actually thought this story was good. And at the end of it, I think there was a lot of questions, which was good, you know, like... Because, like, Shane McMahon can't get to Brock Lesnar now, right?
Right, Brock Lesnar's really? On Raw.
So he can't get to him.
Which is the other interesting thing about him F5-ing Shane McMahon, and that's something I thought too. I was like, are they going to continue some sort of interpromotional warfare, and Brock Lesnar's the crux of it? Because that, you know, it's kind of intriguing.
There's so many, you know, is it going to be Shane and Lesnar one-on-one? Is it going to be Shane bringing in a guy to take on Lesnar? Is it going to be Team Lesnar, Team Shane at Survivor Series? All these things they could do.
It should never be Team Lesnar.
I don't know. You could do
Lesnar doesn't fight on a team.
No, you could do Team Lesnar, it's just him.
True.
him versus four guys. But yeah, I really like this, and I was quite disappointed by how much people were complaining about it afterwards. But
do you think that's an indication that it worked?
I actually do. It's like, because I was hanging out with somebody yesterday, and they were talking about Baron Corbin. And they were saying, like, oh, God, you know, I hate Baron Corbin. And then he was like, but then I kind of realized I'm supposed to hate Baron Corbin. So yeah. It's fine.
Baron Corbin, who, by the way, gave a promo on the pre-show that was less terrible than most of the other promos he's ever given.
That's Saunders' way of giving him a compliment.
Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, what amazing praise, you guys.
It still felt pretty forced and rehearsed, but, like, the way he told Booker T, he's like, yeah, that's a nice watch. And Booker like, Booker's like, oh, thank you. He goes, mine costs more. And it was...
Improvement is good.
It's improvement, so...
My question for you guys, before we wrap this up, mm-hmm. Brock Lesnar has to lose at some point.
Yes, he does. We are... I feel like... I could be wrong, but I feel like what they did last night with Randy Orton and Shane was the beginning of that story being told.
I would agree with that. Now, my question to you guys is, who is the man...
I have the answer and the place for you.
I have the answer. I don't know about the place.
I think it's WrestleMania, and I think Sondra's going to say the same. So, Sondra, tell him who it is.
Shinsuke Nakamura.
That's the man.
That is the man. We're in complete agreement. And I was going to do it a lot, a bigger build than that. I was going to go, it needs to be a man who's held the same title that he has. It needs to be a man with an MMA background. It needs to be a man who can knock you out with one knee to the head. It's gotta be Shinsuke Nakamura.
Absolutely. Like, imagine the sort of dichotomy of the entrances, whether they would have the WrestleMania.
Wow.
Like, Brock just coming out. Brock just coming out with, like, you know, his, like, you know, no frills, usual, and then fucking, I don't know, 200 violinists and the ghost of Michael Jackson and all, whatever they bring.
Be so good. I mean, even if you think about, like, obviously that's the dream match and that's the way it should be, but even if you think about the relative power levels of these two guys right now in their respective brands or companies or whatever you want to call it, Shinsuke Nakamura right now just beat the man who beat the demon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much power does he have? He's never lost. He's, you know, he's a super overpowered monster too.
And how much power would he evoke from the dancing holograms of Freddie Mercury and Michael Jackson at WrestleMania?
But also, think about it this way, like, Brock Lesnar still has, like, so usually he does, what, 3-4 matches a year? He's only done 2 this year.
And it's SummerSlam.
Oh, 3 matches, sorry. So he's done 3. So there's potentially 1 left, you know, because last year he did, I think he did like 5 last year. He did more. So maybe they're going to have him at Survivor Series or something. Maybe they're going to have him back before the end of the year. I would quite like it if they did. But I just wanted to say, like, because there was a lot.
Or should they, is this a way, like, is him F5ing Shane McMahon a way to get him away for a while? Like, are they going to pull the whole, we can't control Brock Lesnar, keep him away from here?
Well, one of the 5-point things for Raw tonight is how will Stephanie and Mick Foley deal with Brock Lesnar in the situation from last night?
Because remember when he F5'd Michael Cole out of his shoe? And they suspended him to get him off TV for a while.
That was tremendous. That was one of my favorite things ever. Yeah. I put a thing up. I put a poll up on my Twitter about, you know, where would you place SummerSlam? Thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, or thumbs down? And 60% have got it as a thumbs in the middle. 20% thumbs up, 20% thumbs down. The thing I just wanted to say is, and I could be, you know, I'm an optimist, so, you know, be annoyed at me for that. But,
David will, don't worry.
I think that
sure, this, I hate optimism.
So I think that since WrestleMania, or specifically since the draft has happened, I've been watching more WWE than I did before. And I've kind of been enjoying a fair bit of it. And I enjoyed SummerSlam and I loved TakeOver. So I'm not that annoyed about anything right now. Like, AJ Styles beat John Cena. Brock Lesnar's got a story again. Finn Balor's the new champion. Seth Rollins is in contention. Roman Reigns is doing something. Rusev's getting higher featured. Cesaro's in a series with Sheamus. Like, the new day around. Like, there's, is it Bailey's going to come up? Charlotte's the champion. There's so much going on that I'm pretty cool with things as they are right now. Could they be better? Yes, of course they could. But they're
still pretty good.
I think they're pretty good. Like, I think where we are this right now compared to where we were this time last year is much better. So. That's just kind of my take, but I know that Sondra, you don't like to rate things, and David, you do. So I'm going to try this, Sondra. I'm not going to push you for a rating.
Thank you.
But I am going to ask you to do one thing.
Okay.
I want you to get your thumb.
Oh, let me find it a second. Oh yeah, it's on my hand. Gotcha.
Three choices. You either need to vote SummerSlam as a thumbs up, a thumbs in the middle, or thumbs down. So please give us your decision and just a summary of why that is what you've come to.
I mean, as Robert said before, a good ending kind of can make a show. And when the show went off the air, I did feel a little deflated about it just because I didn't know what was going on. But overall, I'd say thumbs up. Thumbs up on SummerSlam. There was a lot of unevenness to it. There were things that I think could have been cut, and it's just so freaking long. But I think there was enough good stuff on it that it's worth watching parts of it.
I'm going to give it a 7.5 out of 10. I think it was definitely above average. It was a good show.
It was better than WrestleMania for me.
Well, it was. I think that the big matches delivered, apart from Ambrose and Ziggler, Rollins and Balor will sadly be remembered for the crowd, but I hope that they can continue the series at Clash of Champions and get the crowd to forget about that, or get the audience to forget about that. I thought there was enough highs to make it a really good show, and I think the stuff that was bad was just kind of forgettable for the most part. Like, even the Ambrose Ziggler match, it wasn't bad. It was just mediocre. Nothing special about it. David, what would your rating be for SummerSlam?
I would give the overall pay-per-view a 7 out of 10. The good stuff was incredibly good, and the stuff that didn't click really missed. I would give the crowd, however, the patented Bret Hart 4 out of 10.
So that has been our review of SummerSlam. Thank you very much again for listening. David and I will be back tomorrow or Wednesday, depending on, because I fly back to the UK tonight and I get in tomorrow. So we will find time to record the Raw Rundown. And then Sandra and I will be back with SmackDown Summary on Wednesday or Thursday. Yeah, that's all we know for now. So follow David on Twitter at Zoopsoul. That's ZOOPSOUL. Follow Sandra at Sandra Ruth RW. If you can spell and pronounce the RW, she will give you a prize. And you can get me at KennyMC1985. David, any final words?
I think that this entire world would be a lot better if we all got along and did something nice for strangers. So I want each and every one of you to go out and do something kind for someone else. Pay for their lunch if you're in a drive-thru at a fast food or something. Be like, I'm going to buy the lunch of the guy behind me. But not if he's got like $50 and food or something. You're not some sort of charity case, folks, okay? Don't let people walk all over you. So just buy his $5 meal or tell him to fuck off. One or the other.
What a nice message. Sandra, any final words?
It's going to be weird not podcasting tomorrow.
Yeah, if we're a day or two late on these upcoming reviews, I think everyone can try to understand why.
I think people are probably still kind of catching up, but it's been a blast this week. It's been so much fun getting to talk about wrestling, and I'm glad the state of wrestling is so wonderful right now, because even the stuff that didn't hit on SummerSlam for me, it wasn't like it ruined anything. There were no decisions coming out of SummerSlam that it was like, why did this person beat this person? The world is over. You know, we're not. It's kind of nice to not have one of those situations. Like, why did John Cena have to pin AJ Styles clean? Like, why did this have to happen? Blah, 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 blah. Like, it's nice. And I think there are good stories that can come out of SummerSlam. And I'm actually really looking forward to Raw and really looking forward to SmackDown this week. And I think that's great. So I kind of hope they keep it up, and I'll, you know, be curious to see how Backlash goes in a few weeks.
And this Thursday, Inside the Ropes brings Eric Bischoff to Glasgow. So if you want to get some last minute tickets, Tickets Scotland is where to get your tickets. Just find them on Twitter at Tickets Scotland, and they've got all their information. Come and see us on Thursday night at the Garage with Eric Bischoff's King Controversy. We'll be talking about WCW, WWE, TNA, as much as he can without the lawsuit. All that and more. So yeah, thanks for listening. And I was going to say it'll be nice to not podcast, but I don't know when that day will come. At some point, I can stop talking and stop being sick of the sound of my own voice. Okay, thanks. Bye.